How old is the actress that plays Enod? Do we know?
You know, I don't know. She looks like she's 19. She's in real life, she's probably like 33. That's how it always is. That's how it always is. I'm like, hey, welcome to this high school. They're all 42 years old.
Is that what you told the arresting officer, Matthew? Welcome back to the Walking Dead podcast. I'm Dean. I'm joined by Matthew. And together we're going to be talking about go-getters. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it tonight. I got my good friend Matthew on the line. Matthew, how are you doing this evening?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Good to see our girl Maggie and Sasha again. They're still alive. They're still a part of the show, I guess.
Yeah. I know. I got to tell you, I got some problems with this episode. I'm going to write angry blogs. Yep. I'm going to petition my men's rights activists to get cracking. Because the only thing I saw today was white male genocide, Matthew. I'm very offended. Very offended. I am going to petition my brand new president, Donald Trump. And he's going to help me out. Because I got problems today. I'm very hurt. My lily white flesh shudders at the white genocide that I have to witness after working all day. I got to watch some fucking weak-ass hippie guy who I don't know how he throws kicks. And then I got to watch a bunch of women, some of them black, be heroes? What? Meanwhile,
not in this America.
The only two white men they show is a drunk and a bully. God damn it, I'm writing letters. I can't sleep at night.
Well, good news is, Dean, is that within 2 minutes, you will have the president's attention on Twitter for this.
Yeah. Look, it'll be terrific. We're going to tell that guy from LSG Media, he's a puss. That's what's going to happen. He's going to tell me I'm a puss. He's going to tweet to me. Anyway, white genocide.
Hey.
Hashtag white man genocide. They're coming for us. Oh, can't you tell by electing a white billionaire? Our days are numbered, guys.
When do we get our country back?
I'm done being a douche. And of course, if you haven't learned by now, we're pretty sarcastic here over at LSG Media.
Pretty extreme.
And you better watch yourself, because we're going to have some fun today with this shit. Matthew,
yeah.
Opening impressions for real. What do you think about this week's episode?
I actually think, and I know a lot of people, the internet at large is pretty down on this episode. I actually think it's a little better than last week's episode. I think it's a slight step up. That being said, still pretty fucking weak episode. Not great. Not great.
Right.
There's a couple scenes in here I really like. And like we've talked about, I feel like we haven't really gotten to talk about this since last season, but I have pretty high hopes for the character of Maggie as far as the long arc of the show goes. I still like Maggie a lot. I still like Sasha a lot. And Jesus, I'm like, you got good kicks in you. You got the good spin kicks. Good for you. I hope something more interesting happens with you.
I'm going to jump in right now. I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. Do it. Do it up.
First of all, I am in high agreeance with you. I'm in high agreeance with you on Maggie, and I'm in high agreeance with you on Sasha. But Jesus couldn't kick his way out of a fucking paper bag.
Oh, okay.
All right.
You're getting into some martial arts critiques in this episode, I feel.
Nope. I don't need to. I'm not going to be that douche, but come on, bro. You got to convince me of a fucking amateur from way back in the day. Those fucking crescent kicks. Dude, what do you think? Let me ask you a question, Matt. And I know that you're good about this. Talk to me about what you think Jean-Claude Van Damme would say. And listen, I know he's probably going to make an appearance on this week's Time Cop episode for the Science Fiction Film Feed. What do you think he would say about this skinny ass? By the way, Jesus, not a badass. Stick to your thieving ways. You're not convincing anyone you're a warrior. If this was Dungeons and Dragons, you would be a thief. A skinny, skinny thief. Okay.
Fuck.
He can't beat up anybody. I'm not convinced that Jesus can beat up anybody. After observing him for this episode, I was like, boy, this dude.
I'm gonna toss my theory out is that maybe he's, this is, instead of practicing against dummies or those, you know, those locked arm fucking dummies that Bruce Lee had to block and fight all day long, those wooden dummies, this is his practice. Zombies are just his practice. He's not good against people, but this is him getting his licks in.
He should practice more.
That's my most apologist fucking response I could possibly have.
He should practice more. But what would Jean-Claude Van Damme say about his kicks?
Oh, well now, fuck. If you're going to make me bring in the judgment of JCVD.
I think you should probably get JCVD on the line for this.
Then he fucking... It's a travesty. It holds nothing. It doesn't hold a candle to the fucking glorious, awe-inspiring, alternate universe opening blows of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah. Boy, I don't know. I don't know, man. But, jeez. Woof.
Yeah. I mean, on the outside, like I was saying, this episode for me, I still really like Maggie and Sasha, and I have hope for those characters. And I'm interested enough in Jesus to where I'm like, okay, all right, cool. Let's keep seeing where this goes. Give him something more interesting to do. You know, one of my complaints, an episode or two ago, was that this show I feel like has never really jumped around like they should. Like they tend to focus on, you know, this episode we had a little tiny look in at Alexandria, and then we went over to Hilltop for most of it with Carl and fucking Enid doing their bullshit around the outside. Mm. Whatever. Fucking who cares? But I feel like a fault in the show is that we can jump between, like, why aren't we seeing the storyline of Jesus and Sasha and Maggie at the Hilltop alongside the story of Carol and Morgan at the Kingdom? Like, I don't like how isolated they're making it. Like, it's like we get to look in at one thing per episode. I'm like, why not? Let's look at all of it. Like, I feel like it would make the episode so much more interesting and less weighted down with the minutiae of whatever individual problems this character's having here and there if they were able to bounce between the bigger storylines. And I don't know. I feel like they're trying to focus in a way that I don't feel like they need to.
Mm.
That's my largest problem, really.
Gotcha. I hear what you're saying. You're making a lot of sense there, kid. Do you feel... What was your standout for this week? What stood out to you as,
yes, that's awesome? To be honest, I really enjoyed the zombie fight with the fires and the car at night. I dug that scene. I was into that. I liked that whole sequence.
What was your favorite part? Jesus's kicks or Maggie telling guys who were standing on the porch with their thumbs up their ass to actually do something?
That was pretty good, but I enjoyed the old tractor farmer Maggie getting back to her roots and crushing zombos. Mm. That was good. Mm. I enjoyed that.
I tell you what we used to do. I used to run cars over in the local monster truck rally. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, Grave Digger!
Sunday. One of those.
Yeah. One of those.
All right. So... initial impressions for me. I'm sorry. Were you not finished? I probably should have asked you. That was rude.
Nah, I'm tapped. I mean, that's pretty. I'm ready just to get into it from here.
You got nothing?
But what do you have to say?
So I wasn't joking when I said to you that I actually enjoyed. I enjoyed some of the stuff you enjoyed. I've really been hard on Maggie. I've really busted Maggie's balls a lot. But I was happy to see what she was capable of. They're setting her up to be a leader. She's going to take over Hilltop, I'm sure. And, I mean, they're setting that up, right? It's not exactly a mystery as to that's the direction they want to go. So I think Maggie, separate of Glenn and outside of Rick, has a lot of upswing, a lot of potential behind what she can do and what we can see from her. I'm excited about that. I liked Sasha as well because I thought, like, Sasha's problem to me has always been she's been like this second fiddle to another character that I'm more interested in. I was more interested in what's his name, the guy that got killed.
Abraham.
Stop it. The guy before that. Cuddy. I call him Cuddy from The Wire.
What? Oh, Bob.
No, goddammit. Well, yeah, Bob. Yeah. Who's your brother?
What?
Who's your brother with a hammer?
Oh, Tyrese. Yeah. Fuck. Do we watch this show?
Hey, tune in every week for some hot takes.
Fuck.
I blame the ginger ale in Jameson. Fuck, I'm an idiot.
I really miss Rick's best friend, Travis.
What's Rick's kid's name? Dickie? Mitch?
Dickie Lewis in the news or something?
Dickie, Stevie, Maurice. What the fuck's his name? All right, I'm sorry about that. So she's always been somebody to, in my opinion, push that other character along. She's always been a storytelling crutch for that other character.
That's true. It's unfortunate because she is interesting on her own, but they pretty much do always toss her. Like, she went from her brother to Bob to Abraham.
Right.
And now, in a way, I'm worried that she's gonna be second fiddle to Maggie.
Right. I think so, too. That's why I think the end of this episode for Sasha was interesting when she said, here's something we're going to do. We're not going to tell Maggie. I don't know if that's a good plan to execute for Hilltop, but I think it's an interesting decision for the character of Sasha, for her to have something going on by herself. And God knows she ain't playing second fiddle to fucking that dude. Because as we've already established, all these white guys are pussies.
Big old pussos.
Or tyrants, one or the other. White genocide! Anyway. No, which brings me, speaking of white guys, which brings me to Stephen Ogg as Simon.
Standout.
Loved him.
Standout. He's fucking great.
Loved him. Thought he was great.
Can we talk, you know, this is a little meta, but for the power of video games, this dude was nobody until he played Trevor in Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yes.
And that has brought him so many fucking roles. He's got a recurring part of Westworld, now pretty fucking important on Walking Dead, two of the biggest shows on TV. Holy shit, that was from a video game.
He's been in fucking Better Call Saul. Hey, no big deal. Fucking throw him in Grand Theft Auto and just call it a day. I mean, in Game of Thrones, and just call it a day.
Rockstar just making careers.
I mean, at this point, if he's in The Walking Dead, Westworld, and Game of Thrones, he's made it.
Yeah,
obviously,
he's made it.
But I'm just saying.
You've been seen by everyone who watches TV at that point.
He can go to any of the fucking dorky cons, right?
Yeah,
he can go to The Walking Dead cons. He can go to the fucking Game of Thrones cons. He can go to any of them. And be like, it's that guy.
It's the guy.
It's him.
Oh, he's so good in that video game too.
Yeah, absolutely. He's awesome. And relax. I'm making fun of your cons. God's sakes. So I should probably just take a quick minute, Matt. I think we should pause for station identification. In all seriousness, we're recording this live on Mixlr. Mixlr.com/LSG-media. That's Mixlr.com/LSG-media, where we record all of our shows live. And we also have a chat room going. We've got over 25 people in there now. They're chit-chatting, having a good time. You should join us. If you want to know when those shows go live, well, for the most part, we typically record at 8, 9, and 10 o'clock, and it just depends on the show, and that's Eastern Standard. But go to schedule.libertystreetgeek.net. That's schedule.libertystreetgeek.net, where you can stay up to date on all of our podcast releases across all of the different podcasts that we run. How's that sound, Matt? Is that good?
That's it. Nailed it.
Perfect. All right. So, yeah, he stood out. There's some stuff that stood out to me. Oddly enough, comparing it to the rest of the episodes, I thought it wasn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I feel like last week's episode was the lowest of the episodes so far. I was like, that was kind of a trudge. This one, at least, I don't know, had a little more, I cared about it more.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's just because it was a change of pace, a change of scenery. Low point for me this week is Jesus.
Interesting. Over Enid and Carl?
Yeah, dude. Isn't that weird?
Wow. I disagree with you there.
That's fine. I say that in terms of expectations against what I was watching.
Gotcha.
Carl in Enid, I don't have high expectations for. I have higher expectations for Jesus. I thought Maggie and Sasha were the highlights this week, and I also, of course, appreciated Simon from Negan's group. But I don't know. We'll talk about it as we go through. But in a nutshell, I think what I'm thinking about them is really, and by them I mean him, is I don't know. I'm just not sure what to take of him. He strikes me as And I don't want to disparage the actor in question, but he seems like such an LA, like, just actor guy, like the skinny little actor guy playing this role to me. Like, I just feel like I sniff him out as being a badass. Like,
it's not like Abraham where you're like, yeah, that seems right.
Like, I look at Michael Cutlass and I'm like, okay, all right, I'm convinced. Or even Jeffrey Dean Morgan. But I don't feel that way with Jesus. I'm not like, wow, he's a badass. This guy's fucking no joke. I look at him and I'm like, man, I don't know. You're going to win me. I think in a wrestling match, Sasha could beat you up. Right. Which isn't a knock on Sasha, but I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know what his problem is to me, but. I did think that, as for positives, though, for sure, Maggie. I think they've set up some groundwork to do something interesting with her, which I'm looking forward to, because she's not always been a second fiddle, but kind of. I think we've talked about this in the past, but she needed to kind of get away from Glenn, because the closer they get and the more they become involved with each other's lives, the less it is about her and more about her with him and him with her.
Yeah,
it's just less interesting.
Yeah. No choice now.
Yeah. I don't know.
Got to be interesting on your own.
Yeah. And let me just backtrack on Jesus a little. What I'm trying to say is he strikes me as somebody that's more slick, more sneaky, more. And I know I was being tongue in cheek when I said he's a thief, like class. he kind of has that, like, oh, he looks like somebody who could be sneaky and clever and move them out and move the scotch into the closet and do the old switcheroo kind of shit. You know what I mean? But he doesn't strike me as a guy who would dive into the fucking headlong in like with the kicks and the karate. Like, I don't know. I'd be more impressed if he just bashed their heads in with a bat or fucking. I just feel like they were getting too cute with him.
Yeah.
Feel a little too cute.
Too cute. A little cute. Too dancey. A little too Balanchine fucking.
Yeah, a little too dance. Yeah, a little too dance moves. A little too tippy toes, too much of a ballet dancer, I guess is the way I would put it. But yeah, I mean, but some highs and lows, I will say for sure. Shockingly, I'm not as down on Enid as Carl as I think most of the planet is.
Yeah.
I know.
I have tried in the past and passed up. There have been times with them on other episodes where I'm like, this isn't so bad. We need something for Carl to do. You know, there's some kind of relationship building there. Oh, fuck you. but this episode, God, just the way they handled it, it was just like, oh, I don't care.
Yeah,
like,
I hear
it's,
you.
Whenever they elevate it to this is, you know, it can stand for a C storyline, but not a B storyline. And that's basically what it was elevated to in this episode. I was like, wow, we're seeing a lot of this. Like, this, oh, we're back from commercial break and they're just fucking roller skating. Okay. All right. How much more of this are we going to have to watch?
Here's what I think. Part of my problem is I think I'm more down on Carl because he's yet to do anything to me to make, and this is not meant to be disparaging for the poor kid who fucking grew up on a goddamn TV set.
Right.
I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure he's a nice kid. Whatever. It's fine. Kid, you're fine. Don't worry about it. You're going to be okay. I'm talking more about the Carl Grimes character and like what there is left for him to fucking do. Again, I'm not, this is not Chandler Riggs I'm going after. I think it's just, you've got this kid who is, I don't know, 8 years old when the show started.
Oh God, at least.
And this is like younger. How he's, it's such a weird way to think that he's grown up. Like, how do you have, like, it's just odd. So I don't want to disparage him. I feel like Enid has possible potential. Now, that might just be because she's just a better actor than Carl. and I like some of the stuff, and this is something me and the sub-host are talking about, but I like some of the stuff between her and Maggie, actually. Like, I like the idea of Maggie sort of looking out for her, kind of, and them looking out for each other, and I'm kind of interested in that sisterly relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. I'm more interested in them than basically anything else in this episode. And I'm like, it just has the problem, you know, and it's tough. This has got to be a tough thing to do as a writer for a TV show, but it's hard to make multiple storylines equally interesting. Like, one is always ends up being the standout, even, you know, regardless of whether you mean it to be, you know.
Yeah.
And by far, I'm like, I care when I see Maggie and Sasha on screen. I'm paying attention. And the rest, I'm like, okay, Let's get back to Maggie and Sasha. I'm like, you know, I'm just more interested in that.
Of course. And that's just because when you're watching a very adult show with very intense and heavy themes, I think when you get into some of this stuff with the kids, if it's not executed well, you're going to just be like, ugh. Ugh. I watch a show so I don't have to deal with my fucking annoying kids and their bullshit.
Now here they are, my TV set, getting into shenanigans.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to those shenanigans in a second, but let's make our way through this. Let's talk about go-getters.
So you're going to be in charge now?
No. It's just that you won't be. Maggie and Sasha are staying. I'm staying. We're all going to be one big, happy, dysfunctional family.
So we will be. And I'll see us through this. I made progress with them today.
You saw it.
That's not what I saw.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. We play nice, they play nice. Say, dear, saviors can actually be quite reasonable. Fine watch. Doesn't need to be left out in the rain.
This is our home now. So you'll learn to start to call me by my name. Not Marcia, not dear, not honey. Maggie. Maggie Ree.
So we have Dr. Carson and Maggie.
Yep, yep.
Maggie is told her baby's all good. She needs to take it easy for a few days. Sasha and Maggie have a minute at some grave sites. Sasha gives Maggie the watch. Abraham had a cigar, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about all this shit.
All of this. Well, biggest development of all this is that I was surprised to find out she still has the baby, still pregnant. I did not think they were going to go this route. I thought she was going to lose it as a miscarriage. And it's funny, on my first viewing, I went to a bar and watched this with a couple of friends playing at a bar. And I was like just a minute or two late. And I came in right as the scene transitioned from her being in the little, you know, doctor's office into walking over to the grave. And I thought she was walking over to her baby's grave. I was like, oh, shit, she did miscarry. It happened. And then I was like, oh, no, this is Glenn's grave. Wow, really? She's still going to have the baby? Are we going to have two fucking babies on this show? Mm. Like, I don't know. I still, to be honest, I still think that's not going to happen. I think something awful is still going to come her way because I don't think this is going to be a two-baby show.
Yeah,
but
it's funny you say that because first of all, I want to address the fact that you're watching this in a bar. And I know you've said this multiple times, but that has got to be such a West Coast thing to me. Like getting together in a bar and putting on like The Walking Dead. First of all, I think that's cool. Don't let me pretend that it's otherwise. But up here, you're like, good luck with that. Like you're going to change. Hey, what are you doing? You're changing the fucking Bruins, dude. I want to see Spooner. He's fucking playing great right now. What are you talking about? You're going to put on The Fucking Walking Dead.
Put on fucking make-believe zombie makeup dicking around show.
We got fucking 4-0 over the Canadians right now. This is the best.
So. Fuck Canucks. Fuck Canucks. Yeah,
exactly.
Fuck.
I want to watch Dennis McQuaid pound out that little fucking guy from the Canadians over there. But I don't know.
No, it is. I still never get tired of watching people walk into the bar, realize everybody here is just watching The Walking Dead and leaving.
That is fucking funny.
Like, too bad, we're all here just doing this. You don't get to come in and talk.
Go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. We're doing this tonight.
That's awesome. So we have the gravesite stuff. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? So her baby's good. Okay, let me talk about what you just said. Here's what I think as to why they didn't have her lose her baby now. Because then you have another huge traumatic thing happened to her and she's down and out for how many episodes?
True. Yeah, that's a
like
good
I don't see her up on her feet and like getting, we'd be like, what the fuck? Okay, fucking,
it's a hell of a lot of poison pills to be swallowing at once, like a lot of just
they put Pizza Boy's fucking fish-eyed soup in, right? He's done. She's gonna cry about that for a whole episode, then we wake her up and be like, your baby is dead, your baby is dead, ba ba da ba da ba ba. And then we got to deal with that for a whole fucking episode of her not doing it. Right. Rightfully so. But I just feel like they had to start. They have to get cracking on her. And if they're going to.
And also, I mean, it's a good point of keeping her at Hilltop to say, oh, she's sure. pregnant, which she needs to be watched. So, yeah.
Right. I concur. So I think that's probably what's going on. But I like, I like your what you said when you're like, is this going to be a two baby show?
It's a two baby right. fucking
show.
Right.
I don't know if we're going to do a two baby show here. Because, come on, let's get real. We said I open up a fucking daycare.
It's a Rick and a Daryl and two babies. The Dwight. New rom-com come from Fox, 20th Century Fox.
You won't eat Rick. Yeah, I don't know.
Mash up the carrots.
He's probably got a poop. So Maggie and Sasha share some tears. And I actually like this because I feel like sometimes The Walking Dead doesn't address like a gross trauma. Like, hey, you lost somebody. We never really got a reaction on anyone else who cared about that person. Like when Glenn died, we knew that there was some bonding going on between him and Enid. And we never really got to see that until this episode, which is good. So I'm glad they brought that up. And that, I just think it's important that sometimes we have to address the tragedies that occur or the characters' deaths are kind of meaningless. It's something we talked about in the premiere, which is Abraham kind of gets the shaft here because Glenn is so beloved. He's been around forever. And when they off Abraham as a decoy, it almost cheapens the Abraham character's death.
Yeah. Because, which is why it's good to see that it obviously still means something to Sasha.
Right. Of course. So they talk about staying until the baby's born, of course, to be safe. And then Jesus shows up with fucking flowers.
The green, you already hate him. You're you already. Know, like, you just fucking hate him already.
Oh, the green one means death. And the purple one means this. And oh my God, don't move. Maggie, I'm getting an aura off of you right now. It's like purple. I just want to say you have like this aura right now. And your aura is telling me a lot. I really think you should explore your aura. Okay.
You and crystals and tarot cards. I believe in all that bullshit.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Absolutely.
Big time.
You want to do a reading? Like, actually, can I totally read your palm right now? Oh my God. So
all that weird white people shit, I'm fucking so into it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Do you know how many 40-plus-year-old white women I plowed with us? Saturday. And their big houses on the hill. I don't know. I was just like, ugh, stop it.
I mean, they set up pretty quick here that it's like, you know, I feel like it's a part of it. They're going, okay, we have to almost reestablish the Jesus character because it's been four episodes now into the new season since the last season we've even seen him. And they're really just trying to pound in the fact that, like, he's a good guy. Jesus is a good guy. Jesus gives a shit. He cares. He's a good guy. He wants you to be your personal Lord and Savior. He's a good guy.
Right.
Good fucking guy. And Gregory, bad guy. Bad fucking guy. Don't like Gregory. Bad guy. Like, I feel like they fucking pounded that dynamic a little too hard. Like, I don't know about you, but I still had a really clear memory of Gregory. And he's a good character, even though he's a shitty guy. It's a good character because you sort of get where he's coming from. You're like, he has this kind of, it's a shitty policy, but you're like, in this world, I get it. He's just, you know, super isolationist. He's like, fuck you. Like, I just want, you know, everybody and stays inside of our walls. And we don't even care about what the hell else is going on out there. It's your problem. Get the hell out. And I remembered that about him from the last time we saw him. I didn't need so much pontificating of like, I'm a shitty guy and get the fuck out. Like, but that starts right here, right in the scene. You know, Jesus comes in being a good guy with his fucking green flowers and his blue flowers, and then here comes Gregory. Wow, good thing you're awake. Now get the hell out, pregnant woman.
Yes. You know what you do if you want to shake things up and get real wild? In like one or two episodes, you just kill Jesus. See ya.
Whoa.
Right? Yeah. And then you have a guy like Gregory last for a long, long time. And you're like, oh, he's dead this season. Nope. And that's like kind of like a Game of Thrones move. You're like, oh, I love this character. Boom, they're dead. And the fucking annoying, awful character hangs on for like in spite of what you wish. And that's what makes it. Yeah, man, that would be cool. That would be risky. But yeah, outside of fish eye soup, I don't know if there's a lot of risk left in this. So anyway, Gregory shows up. He's a douche, right?
You guys have to leave.
It's a liability, you being here.
He's like, he reminds me of like, because there's this weird Southern genteelness to him. He reminds me of like somebody from your neck of the woods, like one of these drunk Southern old money fucks. He's got that old plantation money he's sitting on, you know?
I just need to get back to Charleston now.
Yeah, like he's okay with black people not being slaves, but don't fucking drink out of his fucking water fountain. You know, he's one of those guys, right? Yeah. And he's just living
hospitality,
off-
but not that much hospitality.
Yeah, yeah, I believe in hospitality, but come on now, I am not a savage. Hand me my scotch and let me call these pretty girls honey and whatever the fuck. He's one of those guys. Like, and they make him like so silly, but that's what I mean. Like, they could, if they wanted to make him more interesting, he could end up fucking lasting in showing some sort of dynamicness to him. Like, it's crazy, but you could almost make some of his shit sympathetic, and that's what makes it so hard is they're really making caricatures out of some of these characters, which unless they do something else with them, they become less impressive to watch. They lack dynamics. Like, we want to see Gregory. And in the chat, Karen Loma says, how did he become leader? Right. We're just supposed to believe that Jesus said, well, he seemed like the right choice at the time. Yeah. That's because you were too busy fucking muff diving some 45-year-old rich chick in Hollywood. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
trying to fucking find your chakras.
I think your chakras are down in between your legs. Okay. And the next thing you know, she's paying his rent and, you know, buying him 10 speeds. It's one of those situations.
Just a fucking Beverly Hills lady Rasputin.
Yeah.
Fucking wiling his way in everybody's lives.
It's time for you to perform oral sex on me, Jesus.
I don't know. God. But no, I agree with you. I do think that Gregory, we're not too far away from him being a pretty relatable character. I mean, see him. It's tough to watch him being a total fucking kowtowing coward when Simon rolls in. But, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where it's also why I'm so annoyed with Carl right now with the whole teenage angst of like, why is my dad bowing down? I'm like, kid, if you really can't see that there's no other fucking choice in this moment, you're stupid. Like, there's not a choice. Like, even Enid, the only credit I'll give her in this episode is that she's the one pointing out, like, hey, what you're doing is a fucking suicide mission, man. You're going to go and die. Like, maybe you'll get a shot off at him.
Yeah.
And that's all ridiculous. So I understand Gregory being like, look, call me a coward or not, I'm fucking going to bow down in order to not have these guys kill me
and
everyone else here.
Yes.
Like, it's understandable. It's not like I condemn him to just a total piece of dog shit. I'm like, you're an asshole, but I get what your reasons are. And I do like the idea of us, if they kill Gregory in the next episode or two, it's pretty weak shit. Like, that's like, ugh, really? We're just going to fucking toss out the opposition that easily? Like,
I agree.
I would like to see this character hang around and be built on.
So, you're right, because him kowtowing, like, it's easy when you're sitting on your fucking leather sofa with your fucking toy dog on your lap and your fucking beautiful fireplace snap crackling and your fucking beautiful leased Kia outside and be like, he's such a coward. He's such a coward when this guy shows up with all his guys and assault rifles and such a coward. Like, yeah, maybe, but and that's what I mean. If they could bend him a little, people would be like, holy shit, like, this guy's in a weird position. First of all, he runs this town. He watched an adolescent get his brains bashed in like Carl, right? They talk about a boy killed in front of them with a bat. So that's already happened. Gregory's witnessed the same shit that Rick has witnessed. And now these two girls are in your fucking town. Simon shows up and you're like, fuck. If these girls say anything or get caught, I am fucking dead, right? Oof, yeah. So, yeah, he's puss. But, like, at the same time, and he's a snake, and he says creepy shit, and he's a weirdo with the girls. We'll get to that shit. We'll get to all that shit. But him, like, self-preservation, I kind of get in the position that he finds himself in. And I feel like, unfortunately, you have to reach to come to that conclusion when you say that, and it's an unpopular opinion. You're like, yeah, but he's such a puss. Ah, he's a puss. It's true, he's a puss. But if they could make him just a little more sympathetic, like, do you understand the position I am in? Like, pay attention. What about fucking Johnny Rocket? They bashed Johnny Rocket's brains out in front of him. How can you forget that, Jesus? That's on us. Like, make him relatable and make it more of a real struggle. Like, there's no, that's what I'm saying. Like, I want The Walking Dead to have these types of three-dimensional character relationships that are not just so like, Maggie's going to take over the town. I can't wait. This guy's a big puss.
Yeah.
Because everybody feels that way. Like, there's no dynamic to it. I want more. God damn it.
No, I agree. I agree. It would be too easy to make him a cardboard character who he's just there to knock out of the way for Maggie and her to take over and be the hero. As much as I want to see her, like we talked about a lot last season, I want to see her step up and be a bigger, more powerful figure calling some shots. I think she's got it in her, and I think that's interesting. I don't think her opposition should be a one-dimensional pushover.
Right. And like you could, in like Karen's saying, he took a watch off a dead man's grave. That's the kind of underhanded weird shit. He's a drunk. He's a lecherer. He's a thief. Those things, I like, that's cool. He can have those character flaws. But then at the same time, if you make him relatable, it makes those character flaws a lot more like, oh, you, what the fuck, man? Like, more like you're disappointed than you feel rage because this is your leader.
Well, you know what we need? We need more scenes like the kind we have between Ezekiel and Carol, where they sit down and fucking actually talk, not just talk for the sake of a plot.
Yes.
Because most of what we got this episode, and that's, you know, we had the moment in the beginning here between Sasha and Maggie where it's them talking together about where they stand now, who they are, what they've lost. Like, we get a little bit of that, but we don't get any of that for characters like Jesus or Gregory. They're still basically mysteries. They're just like, well, you're the person in charge of Hilltop. That's all I fucking know about you, basically.
Right. That's a really good point, man. You know, when you think about some of the dialogue, it's fucking brutal. Because people don't sit around and say some of the shit. But with Ezekiel and Carol, there's some real dialogue there where he's like, here's the reality. Here's the position I find myself in. Here's what's going on. Now, I guess you could say Gregory doesn't want to do that shit, but I kind of feel like he might want to talk about like what's going on in the position he finds himself in. Yeah. Instead of it just being like everything about him is just despicable. Like everything about him is despicable. Everything about Negan is despicable.
And we'll get, you know, there's a tease about that and a scene coming up here in a second that I actually did like of Gregory being like, you know, it seems two-dimensional for a second where he's like, oh, Jesus, you want to call the shots? You want to take over? And he literally is like, then please do. Like, he basically implies, like, I don't want to do this. Like, if you want to fucking be the leader, you fucking go ahead.
Yes.
And I thought that was interesting.
Me too.
I like the idea of Gregory at some point just going, fuck it, I'm stepping down. It's all yours.
I do. Like, I like that too.
Is interesting.
The thing I also like about that is him calling Jesus bluff, but it also reveals information about Jesus, how he tends to be kind of like a drifter. Like, he just vanishes. So he's obviously not leadership material, which is why Jesus, at the end of the episode, is petitioning for Maggie. Well, at least that's what we're supposed to believe. I think we know that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, Rick, Carl, and Aaron, you want to talk about some of this stuff?
I suppose we should. Angsty teenage bullshit. Here we go.
Yep. I get that, though. Like, here's what I do get about Carl. He has to be frustrated to feel like he's been on top of the world, and now they have to kowtow, and he has to watch his father kowtow to this other man. I mean, that's going to fuck with you when you're that age, right?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if you had to watch your dad growing up, if you were 14 or whatever, 13, 14, just kowtow to anyone. Like, ugh, that's brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is a much different situation, but just that concept alone, I can wrap my head around.
Yeah. And I do, you know, I think it's a good point what you said about like how far they've come, you know, because for Carl, he's been such a young kid for the majority of this and has really only been capable of participating in any of the actual events and the combat for the past couple of months, maybe year. And so, yeah, he not only as long as he's been involved, they finally made it. And now he's only been able to be involved for like a year. And now they're having to just bow back down again to a gigantic force.
Sure.
So yeah, it's probably a tough pill to swallow.
It's a tough pill to swallow when you're that age, for sure. But how about this stuff with Michonne and Rick?
This is the shit I do like. I like the idea of characters like Michonne, like, you know, Sasha, Maggie, being the character, especially Father G, being the characters who hold out and hold strong, even while Rick's in his moment of, you know, being low down, maybe back broken.
Sure.
They're the ones who fucking, you know, keep the fire alive. Don't let him back down. You know, she pulls him in and makes him kiss her. Like, don't you kiss like a bitch.
Kiss me like a man, Whitey.
I think that's what she said.
Kiss me like a fucking man.
Kiss me like a man, Whitey.
I felt like that's what was going through in her head. No, I'm being a dick, but I believe you. I feel like Michonne's decision to kind of grab his chin and be like, "Kiss me, bitch!" Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like, first of all, and I think it's pointing out that like not everything has to change. Okay, maybe we as a community are subjugate to fucking Negan and his guys now, but that doesn't mean that our personal relationships have to fall to shit.
Right.
Like, you don't have to be this kind of like fucking tail between your legs coward all the time. Like, we don't have to be this way constantly.
Right. And I think it's what I like about this is I like that we see that this is something you don't see often in this show, and that's Rick requires an emotional boost, a confidence boost. Yeah. And you don't see that often enough in the way it's handled in such a subtle way by the Michonne character, who I love, by the way. I like how Michonne is just like, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to fucking kiss you. It's going to, like, it's saying, have some confidence. We're going to get through this together. There's so much said in such a simple little thing. And that's what I love about it. That's what I like about it so much.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm a big fan of this scene.
Yeah. But, and you know, she's got to fuck. He's got to lay in wait, man. He's got to get rid of that ego. He's got to pull that fucking Edmond Dantes, right? Just be like, I'll fucking wait, dude. Just smile and have a little meeting. Hey, this is what we're going to say. We're not gonna fuck around. We're gonna get going. We're gonna kneel. Yeah. Oh yeah. We're gonna kneel. Sure.
Yeah. Sure, baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Negan, you got a big old dick. Look great in them leather pants. Yeah. You're the man, Lucille. So scary. Don't bash me with my shit. Oh no. Yeah. Oh, I'm such a baby. And meanwhile, you're plotting this.
You big strong.
You're so strong. Look at those arms. Damn. I don't care if it looks like you have no ass and your pants are falling off. You're so strong. You're so strong, Negan. And then you're just plotting that fuck's demise. Like, that's...
Oh, yeah.
That I want... It would be cool to see Michonne and Rick and these guys kind of start to come around on it. And Michonne... I like how Michonne is, like, has that pride and that strength. And she's trying to pass it into Rick, who could use it right now. Because the one advantage Michonne doesn't have is she doesn't feel this tremendous amount of responsibility that Rick feels for the whole fucking group. Because it's always been that way. Whereas Michonne has always kind of been a loner who has integrated into the group.
Yeah. Yeah. And she has a great, I mean, I love her response here to Carl, because Carl has, you know, so all good. This fucking young hubris of like, well, you know, he's wrong. Like, you know, this is like a shitty situation.
Right.
And she's like, well, even if I felt that way, I don't know. I don't know what we do in response. I don't know a better way of handling this. Like, it's easy. It's like a good example of how easy it is to criticize. You're like, well, we shouldn't do this. This is shitty. I'm like, okay, well, what's your fucking answer? Like, do you got something better? Like, it's so easy to point out.
It's so easy.
This is shitty, but okay, well, now what? Like, this is a fraught, terrible, delicate situation. And what else have you got?
Right.
I think Michonne, of anybody, has taken the right perspective of just kind of soldier on. Like, yeah, do what you need to under this shit, but don't you know, give up your spine.
Right. Right. You have to, there's no situation greater than the one they find themselves in where they have to adopt the adage of pick your battles, right? They really have to pick their battles. And I feel like they would, the only way they could really successfully combat these guys is some sort of coordinated strike at all the locations at once. And that's something I'm sure we're going to see as time rolls on. But I think that moment, it's funny, you have all this talky stuff, but then you could have one moment where Rick is just, you can see him wearing the defeated feeling, feeling the hopelessness, trying to tell his son, who looks up to him, who thinks his dad is so strong, that this is the way it is now, Carl. This is
Carl.
It. Yep, that's it. This is the way it's going to be, Carl. And then Michonne's trying to give him something. And I just thought it was good. It's a cool scene. It's a long, but it's short, but it said a lot. And that's what I like about it.
Yeah. She's the person. Rick's backbone has eroded a little bit, and she's got to fucking donate a little of it to hers. She kisses it to him.
Yeah, there you go.
There. She's keeping the fucking strength alive.
Keeping it alive. So Carl sees Zena trying to go over the wall. She says she needs to go see Maggie. Carl tells her that he ain't saving her anymore. Carl, Carl wasn't talking about the RV. She apologizes that he had to see it, meaning the fucking brain soup. And then he's like, I'm not, because I'm so fucking emo and tough. I wear their brains on my soul.
On my soul.
Yeah.
God, fucking two angsty teenagers together? It's gonna be the collapse of the universe.
Yeah.
This I know. Fucking show. Ugh.
Jamel My Bell in the chat says, Carl got a black mama now. He better be home before the street lights come on.
Yes. I saw that. Fuck.
Dude, the best part good. Of that, you worried about what Negan's going to do to you? You got to go home to black mama?
Damn. Spank you with a sword.
Fuck you up with a soup ladle.
Oh,
fuck
shit.
You up with a soup ladle and a shoe. That's awesome.
It also, hey, we cannot go by the one part and she's like, I'm a better aim than you. And he just stands there all quiet and she's like, I didn't mean like that. And I was like, oh shit, no taking that one back, girl. I'm a better aim than you, pirate. Yeah, that's right. You said it.
Too funny.
Oh, fuck.
So let's talk about, do you want to talk about this Carl and Enid stuff? I mean, it's starting here.
You know what? Let's just plow through this fucking pile of dog shit. Let's just get through it. Let's just go now. All right. So
all right.
Off
you
want to
talk Adventures of Carl and Eden? Carl and Enid?
The Misadventures of Carl and Enod.
All right. It was spoken that Enod would wait for 4 days.
It's like the prophecy.
The prophecy of Enod.
The prophecy of Enod given by the prophet JSS.
How old is the actress that plays Enod? Do we know?
You know, I don't know. She looks like she's 19. She's in real life, she's probably like 33. That's how it always is. That's how it always is. I'm like, hey, welcome to this high school. They're all 42 years old.
Is that what you told the arresting officer, Matthew?
Her fake ID said she was 33. Pardon me for believing a woman.
Were you surprised that this 33-year-old woman, Matthew, that you claim is 33, was walking home after was playing hopscotch carrying her fucking book bag? Oh, off to jail with you.
Fucking lawyers. You're all a bunch of lawyers.
Anyway, I was just curious as to how old she was. And
no idea.
She's somebody 20, John has. David says. Is that confirmed?
Probably.
Okay.
Oh, Lone Star says 17, though. So
okay. I'm not going to say a word. So, yeah. So, okay. So she witnesses a car running over a zombie. The driver is Carl. Hey, babe. Hey, babe. Want to ride to school? I drive. I drive now.
Chaw, babe. I found a fucking sweet seashell necklace. Oh.
Hey, check out my necklace. That's a real shark tooth. Yeah, I got this crazy shop. It's crazy. Yeah, man. Oh, God. So you want to ride to school or like what?
And this, like this scene where it's, oh, she sees one zombie and, oh, it's the tensions are raised. And then, surprise, surprise, just in the nick of time, Carl rolls over the fucking, oh, God.
So
damn it. This sucked.
They talk about watching people get their heads bashed in, which is, I don't know about you, but making me horny as fuck. You
can fucking dangle some onion rings off of this pole. Woo! Fuck.
Damn. So Carl didn't look away because he doesn't want to hesitate when the time comes to kill them.
You know, what's funny about this is that at first when he was like, I didn't look away, before he went on to explain it, I was like, I like that. Like, there was something... I do think there's something to be said about like not looking away in that moment of like, I'm not giving up on this person. I'm going to see it through. Like just as like an act of unity of like, I'm not going to look away because it's painful to me. I'm going to watch and be with this person through the end. I thought that's where it was going. And I was like, oh, that's actually pretty noble of you, Carl. Oh, no, it's for your badass teenage vengeance story. So I don't forget the moment when I have to fucking kill Negan. I was like, oh, fuck you, dude. Come on. Damn it. You fucking teenager. You're such a teenager.
Yeah. How do you think he plans to do it? Like, what do you think is going through his teenage head?
I'm going to fucking knock him down with one hit. He's going to hit the ground, and I'm going to stomp on him, and then his pants are going to get a little loose. I'm just going to yank him off and then just fucking let it happen, you know? Like, whatever happens.
I don't care. I'll totally jack him off, like, whatever.
Just like a little bit. And then I'll punch him some more.
I'll totally run him over with my 10 speed. I don't know. But Enid says it's messed up, but you do things for the ones you love or loved. I'm not sure what she means by that. So Carl says it's not for them and apologizes for locking Enid in the armory. She says she didn't need to see it. So, okay. You want to see it? I don't want to see it. I want to fucking see it. You can see it. We can all see it or not see it. I don't want to forget because I'm going to bash your fucking brains in. I don't know. Can you keep up with the fucking adventures of Carl? The misadventures of Carl and Enid?
Enid.
Enid. Hey, Enid, what are you dying later? So Carl finds some fucking roller skates.
You couldn't even say it, you son of a bitch. You couldn't even say it. You're going to defend this? You're going to defend Carl and Enid over Jesus?
All right, can I just say one thing?
Oh, fuck.
All right, here's the only thing I like about this scene is it reminded me of something from my childhood, and I'm just going to throw it out there.
Whoa. But
I had a high school girlfriend, and I wanted to see her really bad, and I didn't have a car. And I put on my inline skates. Yes, it was the 90s. And I rollerbladed my...
And your fucking NXS CD on your Walkman.
Do-do-do-do. A suicide blonde. Do-do-do-do. A suicide blonde. Yeah, that's...
I'm going to get to my girl's house.
So, listen, I'm not going to joke with you. I mean, I'm totally going to be serious with you. I'm not joking. I put on my inline skates... And I rollerbladed my ass 3 miles to her house in the 90-degree Florida fucking weather because that's when I lived down there for a while.
God, you savage.
Dude, I went through hell to get to that pussy. That was some blistering...
What teenage boys will not do for a naked female body is impossible.
Dude, I fucking pumped my legs harder than you've ever seen. Up here right there. Oh, my God.
He's stopping at a payphone.
Dude, I fucking pull up. Do, do, do. I suicide blow. And I fucking, you know, joke. I'm like, yeah, I'm cool. Yeah, it's cool. I'm wearing a Bruins jersey. Like, even though I'm in Florida, it's cool. I'm different. I like Ray Bork. It's cool. And then, like, I definitely need to take a shower because I'm sweaty as fuck. Because it was, like, hot-ass Florida weather.
Ugh. God.
And I was like, when are your parents going to be home?
Just sweating vinegar.
And then it's like, you just got to fucking skate home after. It's just fucking brutal. So anyway.
Yeah, man. Brutal.
Yeah, it was brutal. But I told you what, I skated long and hard for it. And that, and I was just quickly reminded me of that. And then
pumped those little games.
Yeah. I pumped the shit out of my legs. I was fucking vile and gross. But, yeah, it's a good time. So, anyway, when this started, and he's like, Ina, chocolate rollerblades. Actually, they were roller skates.
Yeah.
And that is so hipster. Those are Jesus's, right? 900%. Those are Jesus's rollerblades. Because
I'm going to toss. He's on the road, so the Saviors can't find him.
Yeah, I'm not really into inline skating. That was, like, cool in, like, the 90s. But, like, I'm so retro and like, ironic that I'm going to wear roller skates.
Something about the sound of vinyl roller skate wheels is just superior.
So superior. Like, there's a lot of different techniques. So, kind of, I don't know. But he finds roller skates. Now, here's what I will say. At least it was brief. And they didn't say anything.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I'm going to give the scene.
No, to be honest, it's funny. Because the lead up to it and their conversation around it was eye rolling for me. Once they're actually skating.
It wasn't
like, the shot
that
of them,
bad.
Yeah, the shot of them like holding hands and skating for just a second. They didn't linger on it too long. I was like, it's kind of cute. Okay.
It wasn't that bad.
Let them have it.
They didn't say anything, which is cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they fucking held their little hands and they
Thank
skated.
Thank God this shit wasn't directed by Zach Braff. We'd have a fucking Shin song and be like 20 minutes long. Fucking skating through. Oh, let's skate through fucking downtown Rhode Island. Huh?
Oh my God, Ferret Hill's so nice. Yeah, I don't know. Fucking weird. But it was brief. They made it brief. It wasn't like they talked about it or whatever. But dude, if a walker shows up when you're on skates, you're kind of fucked.
You're fucked. Oh man, you're so right. We kept talking about that at the bar. They were like, man, you better hope some fucking walker doesn't dive out and trip your ass. You are fucked.
Yeah. So because let me tell you, what's hard to do is move quick at all when you're not actually skating. Like if you start running on the fucking grass. If you start chunking across the grass, it's so easy to turn your ankle over.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know. Ugh. But unless you, unless you're fucking Bobby Orr and you can fight on those things, you're in deep shit.
Oof. Well, should we get to the scene where they arrive at Hilltop?
Yeah.
And see what's going on? I mean, if we're going to blow through this car.
Yeah, yeah. They watch Simon
fucking
from...
Let's rip this fucking Band-Aid off, right?
All right. They watch Simon from the tree line. He didn't realize there's a call was taken. You weren't coming to get me. I can't let them get away with this. Come with me. It'd be for us, not Abraham or Glenn. You're doing it for you. Yeah. So it all goes right. You do it. How do you get away? It wouldn't matter. And then
there's a part of me that wants to go, I want to concede a little bit to him and be like, okay, this is not just a teenager, like a teenager in our world. Like, this is a teenager who has had to shoot his mom post giving birth to his sister, has seen people die, has killed people, has watched his two friends get their heads bashed in a week ago. He's seen some heinous shit. He probably has an actual, you know, darker, better understanding of the world than your typical 15-year-old. The problem is he's being portrayed by a typical 15-year-old.
Here's the problem, and Mando Torrey just fucking hit a long drive, shit. Way back, over the wall home run, and it's get a fucking haircut and I'm in.
Yeah.
Dude,
I'm serious. You know what I'd really love to see?
He looks ridiculous.
So ridiculous.
So ridiculous.
This is, again, one of the times where they're sticking to the comics is just like pure dogma. It's like you're just doing it to do it. Like, why do we need Carl at this point? Like, Carl, as a 9-year-old kid with long hair, it looks kind of shaggy and wild in a sense. And you're like, oh, that's unusual for a little kid. A teenager, the actual Chandler Riggs age teenager who's this tall and lanky with long hair, just looks like a fucking emo dipshit teenager that we're all seeing. Like, it destroys the image of it. Where I'm like, I would love to see a Carl pull a fucking Shane move and just shave his head with some clippers in front of a mirror and be done with this. And look a lot. I mean, can you imagine Carl's shaved head with his fucking one eye? Like, he would look like a hard motherfucker. Then, like, I could actually buy some of this. Bow, yeah, bow, I fucking agree.
As he's shaving his fucking head. Cute crying game. I think
that's what it was. Oh my god.
I think he looks ludicrous. You look ludicrous, kid. It's not cool. That's part of the problem, I think. And can I just say something? So if you ever had like your hair parted in any way, he's lucky his fucking eye is the one eye that he parts away from, because his hair would be in his good eye if he had to part the other way. Like, it'd be funny if he lost his other eye and he had to like fucking comb his hair the other way. He's like, oh, it just don't
switch
work.
My part.
Gotta switch my part. Gotta train my hair. And then he just buzzes that shit off. That would be classic.
Fuck, that's true.
It would be awesome. First of all, give her the hat. What the fuck are you doing with a hat?
Shave the hair. I could buy the hat if he just shaved his head.
Stop with the hat. Get rid of
it. But anyway, so we have Carl embarking on a suicide mission. Like, he's outwardly, at least, has accepted it. Like, yep, I'm not going to make it back. That's fine. Like, oh, okay. What?
Yeah.
Really? You're willing to just fucking die at maybe getting a chance pot shot at Negan? Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, this is one of those times where you're like, well, is this the kind of stupidity that an actual teenager might do? Maybe so. Like,
maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yep.
It's rough. But then he gets on. They evidently sneaks on to one of their cargo trucks as they're loading up their supplies from the hilltop. And Jesus gets on as well and sees him.
Yeah, for sure. Jamel, my bell in the chat says, Enid can't kiss worth a shit if Carl decided not to go with her.
He was like, oh man, Michonne's way better than this.
Well, no, Carl.
I know, that's what I mean.
Did Michonne kiss Carl?
No, I'm gross. Just fucking with you.
Oh, I mean, like he was watching?
Go with Dad, get it. Yeah.
Oh, shit. No,
Mama Michonne's a way better kisser than you.
Yeah, and she's all shiny. Fucking what's with Michonne being so shiny? She'd be fucking putting baby oil on or some shit. She's fucking shined up real nice. I don't hate that shit one bit. She's all Georgia hot.
So that's, I mean, that's pretty much it for the Carl and Enid storyline, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, fucking, we see Jesus hop on, take a swig of scotch, and he notices Carl. Hey, he fucking pokes his head out.
Hey, bro.
Hey, what's up? Hey.
You riding in there? Cool, bro. Okay, okay, bro. Bye. All right, so let's get back to the real story. What do you want to do?
Where were we?
Well, we go back to the beginning. We start with Jesus, Asha, and Maggie. They talk about convincing Gwagaway. Jesus, Gladly. Right. He says, Jesus says that he is trying. He also says that he isn't trying to be the leader. That's not what he wants.
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't. So Sasha offers to pay Maggie's way by scavenging. So Sasha is negotiating with Gregory. It's not going well. Jesus says he doesn't want that either. Oh, no, that they're talking about it. And she's like, what do you want, Jesus? Mm-hmm. What do you want? What are you doing? I just try to help, he manages, but Sasha tells him that maybe he has to do more. You might have to do more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to have to be, you know, he gets the same criticism from Gregory as he does from Sasha. Of
sure.
That you're going to have to be involved. And right. I think that's what we're going to see from the overall storyline of Jesus, that it's not, you don't get to live here, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and really be gone 90% of the time doing whatever the fuck you do. Sort of scavenging, sort of, you know, maybe doing some recruiting for them, but generally just gone and not really a part of things. This is just sort of his
right.
home base.
Right.
Instead, he's going to have to be committed and in the thick of it and even in the politics of it, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. So Jesus gives a necklace to Sasha that we know he lost when he got punched in the face when he was fighting, remember?
Yeah, that's right. We saw it land in the hay and we never got it back.
Right. And then Maggie arrives. Jesus tells her that they will try to see what he can do. She asks Jesus why they burned their dead. The idea was to keep going. Blah, 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 blah. What do we have to remember them? Us. They talk about Gregory. They call him an idiot and a coward. A coward is more dangerous. Maggie says, I agree. They decide to think about it for the night. So this is just a scene sort of getting ready for the idea that they're going to go ahead and do some shit. Like, we got shit to do, so. We got to figure out how we're going to approach this guy, Gregory, and figure shit out.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, Jesus is reticent because of just like Gregory doesn't go for anything that has any amount of risk attached to it. Like, basically, you know, we already had him say it in his first interaction. Gregory was like, they're a liability. They can't be here. I've already made my decision.
Sure.
Like, he comes down on it in that way. And that's why, you know, as logical as Sasha's being, it's Jesus just like, he's not going to go for it. Like, he's
right.
not going to go for anything that means even the slightest amount of risk of safety.
Right. So, Helltop, later, let's talk about this evening thing that you like. This gates open, fire, car, music, this thing.
Yeah.
Take me through this, Bad Larry.
I fucking like it. They just get woken. I love that they just get woken up to the music, because that is some eerie shit in this world, to just be woken up. I think it's Beethoven's ninth symphony. You're just woken to this at night, peer outside, gates wide the fuck open. Like, that's the only thing keeping you alive in this world, walls. And you're just wide open with fires going, you know, that attract zombies, music blaring that you know attracts them. I just loved it. I loved the setup. I was already like, ooh, I like this ticking time bomb. Zombies are going to come fucking pouring in.
And then they start to fucking pour in.
That's it.
You get Maggie and Sasha. They get into the roof. Sasha goes down into the yard. Maggie shouts orders from the roof. Jesus heads down and shitty kicks a few walkers. I call it shitty kicking.
I'm fucking into it, man.
Shitty kicks.
I don't give a shit.
Shitty kicks.
I've been wanting to see somebody kung fu zombies for like the entire run of this show. I'm like, it's about damn time. Yeah. Even if they're shitty kicks, I'll take kicks. I'll take my shitties.
They're shitty kicks. But, Sasha attempts to get at the car, but it's all locked up. They can't access the stereo. Maggie runs over a bunch of walkers. The tractor, Sasha stabs a bunch of walkers. And Jesus
does... like a real fucking Nobel Prize winning leader, Gregory peers out the window, sees it, backs away quietly into the darkness.
Into the shadows.
I'll just sit over here. Fucking good. What a champion. Hero.
Yeah, yeah. They're getting rowdy again on the land. So the music stops anyway. So Maggie shouting orders, you guys over there on the porch doing nothing as zombies walk in. Do something. God damn it.
Do fucking more than nothing at all.
Fucking.
All right.
twiddle-dumb and twiddle-dumber standing there not doing anything. Just you guys over there, do things. I can't do things.
I'm all preggers and junk.
I'm all preggers. But yeah, so those guys get cracking. Yeah, they're standing there fucking wondering what the fuck's up. They get out there. They take care of the car. So I like the idea of the car going in and being like a noise box. Obviously, it's something they didn't fashion yesterday. They probably use that a lot as a distraction technique.
Yeah, I bet so.
And they must have pushed it in, maybe put it on neutral, rolled it into the down the hill.
There you go. I love it. I love it. And I love Maggie's fucking just straight, quick thinking. Just fuck it. Hop in a damn tractor. Run this bitch over.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. I don't mind her running the fucking zombies over the tractor. I think that's cool. I like that they backed. I like that she monster truck rallied the cars. Right?
Oh, yeah. I was into it. I was into the whole damn scene.
It doesn't get more Southern white girl move.
Get in my John Deere and run over a little car.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some shitty foreign car.
Absolutely. This reminds me of Mikey when he cheated on me in high school. Fucking runs over that car. That's funny. So yeah, she runs over the car, crushes it, music stops.
Plows it over. Jesus and Sasha getting to work on all the zombies that have already poured in.
Mm.
And I get, we don't see it, but I guess they get a hold of the gates, or the two idiots who were sitting there up on the porch got a hold of the gates.
Yeah, yeah. So we get over to Jesus and Gregory. He makes a case for Sasha and Maggie staying. Gregory tells Jesus that the place is his if he wants it, but he calls Jesus' bluff, essentially. Do you want all this, he asks him. He tells him that he'd have to stick around for 5 minutes first. And, of course, the saviors show up. So, as we mentioned, when we teased the scene, which essentially means we just kind of covered it already, but he calls Jesus' bluff. Jesus is a guy who seems to be flaky, and I want to stick around. Look, listen, Gregory, seriously, I just go where the wind takes me, okay? Like, I can't be into your rules or, like, your structure. I am not, like, a 9-to-5-er, okay?
Whenever the wind chimes tingle, brah, it's where I go.
Have you ever read the 4-Hour Work Week? That's, like, 4 hours too many. So, I don't know. Yeah. He fucking does.
He fucking, ugh.
Yeah.
And of course we get the pile on of Gregory just being gross, where he's like, well, maybe we can one-on-one talk. I'm a sloppy, disgusting piece of shit.
I'm real gross. Hey, yeah, I'm going to get some scotch. I got Sasha over here. I got Maggie over here. I'm thinking a chocolate and vanilla twist. Come into my study, girls. We're going to look at pictures of old dead guys on horses and get busy.
Oh, he's like, you can still do it until birth, right?
Oh, man.
Oh.
I won't be interrupting nothing down there, will I? He's a creep. Fuck that guy.
Creeping.
But that's what I'm saying. They could do these subtle creep things, but still have him kind of relatable and add a dynamic to him. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, so far this episode tilts so heavily towards Jesus and, like, you know, his perspective, because we see
Like
I was saying at the beginning, it's like, Jesus, good guy, Gregory, bad guy, because Jesus is like, I'm here advocating for them. They should be able to stay. We should help them stay safe and everything. And Gregory pretty rightly makes the point of, like, look, this is complicated. This is not just so simple as saying, okay, sure, we're just going to keep him safe. Like, he, you know, because, and this is the whole thing that I feel like Jesus doesn't get, where Gregory does have the point of, like, you're not thinking about the more, like, political ramifications of, like, we have this deal with the saviors, and they have their thumb on us, and we fucking made a deal behind their back to hire these guys to kill them. And if if that gets back to them, we are fucked. Like,
sure.
I do get him wanting to sit on that as tightly as possible. Like, this can't get out. These people are a liability. As much, you know, the show doesn't give him room to present that without looking like a dickhead.
Sure. So let's talk about the arrival of one Simon. We need to talk.
And then he fucking beats a prostitute with a bat and steals a car. Because that is his origin, baby.
How many times did you crash an airplane, Simon? Let's be real.
That's so good.
How many
good.
Banks you rob, Simon? So, how many meth heads did you blow away, Simon? So, Gregory and the Saviors. We need to talk. Simon wows at a painting. Gregory says the message was read loud and clear. This scene, okay. Gregory is fucking gross. Grossly appropriate in this when he's like, doing that like gross placating Simon's ego thing.
Oh, dude, it's disgusting.
It's vile.
It is the worst.
Simon's essentially, he's extorting him. He's like, we're just showing you what kind of services we can provide. But here's what I will say. Overall, I really like Simon's scene. I thought he did a good job. I like about what he did here. It was pretty subtle. It wasn't, I mean, until the very end when he has him kneel. But their guys aren't fucking with other people. He's not literally threatening violence. He's just going through the motion.
And that's, you know, I've read a couple of other reviews where people were like, oh, why would they have to roll in with this many guys? Like, we saw, you know, it's interesting that we've seen the exchange between the Saviors and the Kingdom is very low key. It's way off from their home base. They meet like in an outside area. It's only like 6 or 7 Saviors, meets up with Ezekiel. They give them whatever they're giving. It's like what I get from that is that they've been working together long enough and they've come to enough of an understanding that, hey, Ezekiel is going to fucking deliver. You don't got to worry about him. You don't need to harass or intimidate or make a big show of strength. It's that, hey, we have an understanding.
Sure.
We'll make this work. Let's not make a big deal of it. Whereas the Hilltop and Alexandria, they seem, you know, like not fully under the thumb yet, especially Alexandria. And in this situation, it's Simon who damn well knows, even though he doesn't reveal it in this episode, they fucking know that the Hilltop had something to do with Alexandria going after them. And that's why he shows up with 60 fucking dudes of like, hey, this is just to remind you, if you even have it in the back of your mind that you're going to rebel against us, we can crush it in a second. Like, look at what we have. This is. I'm not going to come here and say, hey, I'm going to fucking start shooting people until we get information. I'm just going to come in and say, hi, we're going to talk. But I'm going to have all these guys behind me just to remind you that we're just talking right now. And that's all I'm here for is just to talk. But if I wanted to, I could fucking ransack this place and burn it to the ground.
Yeah, I think what you have going on here is also Gregory's max of incompetence, and there's a concern here where Ezekiel doesn't. I think you're probably seeing a big difference in the way they're both managing their areas, and I think Simon can probably get a sense for Gregory. Not to mention the men that were dealing with Gregory all ended up dead. That's very sketchy.
True.
So he's probably trying to go, what's going on here? We need a show of force. We're not going to just collect dead pigs, slaughter pigs on the outskirts of your town. We're going to go in with a show of force and see if we can figure out something. And maybe Gregory betrays some sort of emotion or tell, and we start to get to the bottom of the fact that the guys that were dealing with his crew all ended up dead. But don't worry, because those guys are working for us now. So I have a feeling that has something to do with it, but I guess we'll find out. I think the relationship dictates how many men show up.
That's true. Yeah, I think that's exactly it.
Yeah. So Simon says, it looks like you took care of things yourself. And that's when Gregory kind of backwards says, no, we must have picked up on your skills from your people. So in a way, you did save us. And Simon just like, thank you. I appreciate that.
Dude, that was the worst. He's like so groveling. In a way, you actually were the heroes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, God.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Unbearable.
So, and Simon eats it up, but, you know, Simon's not fooled by this guy. No fucking way.
Oh, hell no. No. That's the thing. That's the smartest thing Negan has done, because we've talked plenty about the problems with Negan, the problems with the idea of being that level of savage and just keeping people under your thumb and crushing people out. Like, you're just fomenting your own rebellion. Like, eventually people are going to fucking turn against you. You can't be this awful all the time. But I think he has surrounded himself, again, with guys like Simon, and with what I think he eventually wants to turn Dwight into, a guy like Simon. Like, these guys are fairly independent and pretty smart on their own. Like, Simon strikes me as a guy who's fucking capable, who knows how to deal with the rest of the Saviors and command a group of guys like this, and is pretty adept at applying the pressure of extorting the communities they need to extort. I mean, They're all equally fucking awful, but they're capable. And I feel like that's Negan's real strong suit, is in identifying these guys and elevating them. That's what we're seeing with him and Daryl. I mean, that's why he's kept Daryl alive. He's saying, this is a guy who's fucking tough and wily, and if I can get him on my side, if I can somehow get him aboard, he's going to be a very useful tool for me. And I have the feeling that Simon's story is probably similar.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought of this a lot this week. I thought one of the things we've said for this season is we've said, how does Negan inspire loyalty? Because it doesn't seem like living near his compound or wherever he is, wherever they have Daryl, is fun. We watched a man get murdered. Dwight watched a man get murdered while, you know, watching Who's the Boss reruns. So what I really feel like I need to see out of Negan is the way he handles a guy like Simon. How does he get Simon on board? How does he keep these guys in line? How does he engender trust in, you know, the way he talks about them as a unit and them being this team? How does that happen? Because we've seen him really do this weird power trippy thing over Dwight. We've never really seen him interact positively with any of his own men.
We've never seen it.
Like, I've never seen Negan do anything or say anything about any of his men.
That's true. Not in any, like, personal,
no,
this is what I'm doing for you sense. Yeah.
Like, I want to see him treat some of his men well so I can start to buy into the fact that this menacing, bat-wielding lunatic has loyalty. When you have a guy like Simon, all these things, one charismatic guy goes in there, and charismatic and smart guy goes in there, he can flip the whole team against Negan unless he offers something different. What does he offer? You know?
Mm-hmm.
In the chat, Pasta Slano says, maybe it's the pussy buffet. I guess that's possible, right?
Suppose so.
I guess.
That's what he throws at Dwight.
Yeah. So anyway, they chat around. He talks about, Simon brings up, those guys got themselves butchered. They must have been getting soft dealing with you. Simon says, and then Simon says, the people that killed them work for us now, but it's okay because they are real go-getters.
Real go-getters. And you know, part of what he's saying in that moment is that they're a lot tougher than you. Like, those people who also are under our fucking thumb are badasses, and you fucking ain't. Like, he is pointing that out.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I do like how Simon brought up, and I thought this was smart. He's like, when those guys slaughtered our brothers and our sisters, like, reminding us what actually went down at that place and what Rick did, right? It was cool. It's cool to hear them reflect on the people who got murdered. It would be cool to see some sort of emotional connection there that would almost create some kind of sympathy for us and the saviors. Because currently there's none, you know? And that's what I'm saying. I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for The Walking Dead to have more dynamic characters that have more complex relationships that put you in a spot where you're like, man, boy, I don't know. This is a tough call. Or obviously, you're still going to side with your heroes in the end, but make it interesting in that sense, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
be kind of cool. But anyway, easy for me to say. So Simon says, we recognize what you bring to the table. That's why you're here, and others are not. And Simon probes Gregory for more info. Anything else I should know? And it's at this point in the episode where the sub host said to me, don't you think it's interesting that Simon is imitating Negan in a sense? He's almost, it's almost like Negan's rubbed off on Simon, like this approach, this sort of quiet menace, but with his own style. It's kind of interesting to think about.
I think that's it. I think that that's how it works, his control of... He has menaced these people into control, and they turn around what's worked on them on the people they have to now control for Negan.
Like,
they were menaced by this style, by this kind of power, and now it's almost like the thrill of getting to do what was done to you is what keeps them in line. Like, where Simon gets to go, I get to fucking be this guy now. I was terrified of Negan, but now I get to be Negan to these other groups of people, and hey, this is a pretty good deal.
Sure.
I mean, that's a little part of it. Everybody gets their own little power trip.
Sure, sure. That's fair. So Gregory walks them to the closet and opens it, and of course, Jesus did the old switcheroo, the scotch for he moved the scotch.
The old girls to scotch magic trick, that old classic one.
The old prestige. Where are they? Bing ba da dee. And then, of course, Simon is a gin man himself, but wow, what a gesture. I do like, and it's not subtle, but totally. I mean, it's like Jesus's gesture, like his facial expression is like, you see, like the eyes, just telling him with his eyes, like what happened.
Don't go in there.
I'm on to you, Gregory. I knew you would do this. I pulled the old switcheroo. So Simon's a gin man. He says he'll take credit for this. I kind of be honest with you. I'm going to cut you out of this one.
I want the headline on this.
Yeah.
I actually like how honest he is with him.
Me too.
He's just like, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to totally take credit for this.
This is big. This is big, Gregory. Huge. Too funny.
But he does, to his credit, to Simon's credit, I mean, like he said, I'm your Negan. So you've impressed me. I'm happy with you, bud. Now I'm just going to take credit for it for my Negan.
Right.
It's just up the chair. It's Negan's all the way down, baby.
Yep.
Somebody's got to take credit here and there.
I like it. I like it. Oh, one last thing, Matthew. Can you do me a favor? Could I get a kneel? Could you kneel down for me?
Just one kneel.
Just give me
a
kneel.
Can you pull down my zipper with your teeth?
Open up.
Fuck.
So, yeah. Then he takes a knee, and that's a solid kneel, Gregory. Hey, Gregory, that was solid.
You're real good at getting on your knees, Gregory.
Yeah, Gregory. Hey, that was amazing.
You keep it up, I'll toss you some pads.
So, that's it. Remember that for next time, he tells them.
Oof. Damn. Brutal.
I like it. I liked Simon's stuff here. I really did.
I did. You know, he's fantastic. He's really, really good. And this, again, is one of those guys who strikes me as the kind of person who's so pragmatic that you could get him to turn against Negan eventually, where it's like, it's not pure loyalty that keeps him drawn to Negan at this point. It's that Negan has access to a lot of resources, has a lot of power under his control, a lot of things already going for him. So why fight against him when you can also be tapped into all those resources and all that power?
Mm-hmm.
But if Rick and an alliance of him and Hilltop and the kingdom came together, that you could maybe start pulling away some of these captains of Negan's, like fucking Dwight and Simon, with just a, hey, we can provide you what Negan provides you, and with the respect of not having to literally fucking get on your knees for this.
Sure, sure.
Like, that is something, and I feel like Simon's the kind of person who might go for that. But then again, it also makes you go, do I want somebody like Simon in my fucking ranks? Like, is this somebody who I want around? I don't know, but still.
Yeah, it's a good point. So Gregory, Jesus, Sasha, and Maggie here. Gregory's mad that they were not in the correct closet. Of course, he's mad. I like how indignant he is. How dare you not have them in the right closet so I can turn them over?
How dare you let me sell out these two fucking innocent women?
Jesus Christ. So Jesus takes a hard stance on Sasha and Maggie. He says they're staying. Jesus tells Gregory that they will not go, and that Gregory doesn't want the Alexandrian deal public, right?
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, Maggie throws a right cross right into Gregory's pudgy face. Pink.
I did enjoy this.
I did too. And I was like, what the fuck? And it was Glenn's watch. Gross.
Fuck.
I will not be called honey or sugar or plum cakes or pumpkin pie or Daisy,
Tiddlewinks.
Or Tiddlewinks or princess. No
or nice
more.
Ass.
Or nice ass. Or apple tits. No more. You will not call me. You will not call me apple bottom no more. You will call me Maggie, pizza delivery man's wife, Ree.
Woo!
Fish eye soup.
Hell yeah.
Ree. That's me. That's my boy.
That's my dead boy. I got his name.
Gotta be honest with you. The Ree part.
Ah, oh, you monster. I liked it. I fucking liked it.
Man.
I liked it.
I don't know. I
fucking
don't know.
Don't stand on my ground on that shit. I dug it.
All right. That's the hill you're going to die on.
That's it.
That's the hill you want to die
it,
on.
Internet. Right. Fucking come get me.
I'm Maggie Ree.
Ree.
Because I'm married. See, what happened was Glenn and I got married. He really liked me, and we kind of did it. It was cute. I mean, it was over quick.
I busted a little egg on his head.
I mean, it was cute, but like, it was over quick. What are you going to do? He's a pizza boy. It's cool. He was cute anyway. And we did it. And then, like, we got married, right? And then he got his brains bashed in. They smashed his head in with that bat they call Lucille. But we are still married, technically. And I'm Maggie Ree. That's how that came to be. Now you know the origin of it, Gregory. I'm sorry I punched you in the face. Let's say a prayer.
I just all in the moment.
I like that. I like that she said Maggie. I think the re was like. I'm sorry. I'm a monster.
I dig it. You are a monster. You're an unfeeling monster.
I'm sorry. I do like Maggie though. I'm back on board with Maggie. I will say that. And my name is Maggie.
Maggie, I'll get ya.
So that was cool. I didn't mind it so much. I liked that she was like, I'm going to run this town, because we, of course, know that this is going to happen. Jesus tells Maggie and Sasha that when he got to Hilltop, that the people had already chosen Gregory, which I was like, wah, wah. He thinks it just happened.
You.
He admits to not liking how he did things, but didn't imagine anyone else in his place until now. Maggie. I just want to say, I looked at your rising Phoenix Saturn planet, and
you're a water sign.
You're a water sign, but it seems to be like you're Mercury rising right now, which, as you know, means you're getting hotter. And it appears.
I feel like I'm being poisoned.
And it appears that now's the perfect time for you to get into a leadership position. Okay. So, I guess he thinks so. Maggie asks.
Now's a perfect time for you to achieve your leadership position and reconcile with friends.
But seriously, don't take any
fun. And your lucky numbers are 17, 9, and 12.
But do me a favor. Don't take any unnecessary financial risks. They could be catastrophic. At least until the next full moon.
God.
Yeah. That's what's happening.
Fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. What do you want me to do? So... And Maggie's like, who? Because I'm fucking an obtuse country girl. And then Jesus is like, I'll tell you sometime. Wink, wink. But then this shit's cool, which I like, which is where Sasha says, if you want to make it up to us, can you find where Negan lives? And Jesus is like, of course. And then she says, keep it between us. I like that.
Ooh, fucking Sasha. This is more shit I want to see from her. I want to see her doing her own fucking thing, independent of fucking big brother and boyfriend and fucking second ginger boyfriend. I want to see her doing this shit, getting wily behind the scenes. Hey, I got a fucking undercover mission for you.
Yeah, I like
it. Shit. It's good shit.
So I like how he says, I don't like that, and she says, me neither. But Maggie goes down to the gravesite and sees Enid. I actually like the stuff between these two. I will say that.
You know, yeah, it's funny. I've seen a lot of complaints just kind of at large about, oh, Maggie and Enid and this relationship, and it seems a little rushed. I remember this from last season. I remember that it was Maggie who kind of stepped in and took Enid under her wing.
Yes.
Like, Maggie was basically the link to keeping Enid from running away from Alexandria. Like,
yes.
She was the one who really kept her around. Like, I remember that. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this is one of the few... I actually buy this relationship. I mean, it's not like they're best fucking friends or it's her new fucking surrogate mother, but I mean,
sure.
She cares about her.
Sure.
They're actually friends. And yeah, I like this.
Mm-hmm. I like it. So Maggie mentions how she ran over a high school boy's car once. It was a Camaro. Then it wasn't. I actually thought that was cute. I didn't mind that much.
Yeah,
I could see her doing some shit like that.
Oh yeah, wild Maggie Green, but back before I was Miss Ree.
I want back my Skinnerd CDs. Awesome. Fuck Simple Man.
<I don't know. laughs> You can shove your Def Leppard up your ass.
I want back seasons 2 and 4 of Dukes of Hazzard. Whatever.
Oh, God.
Back when a
red-blooded American can still buy something with the Confederate flag on it, General Lee.
Fuck. We know her boyfriend's car had that shit on there.
100%, man.
It's fucking hood. And then they go back for some grilled cheese and tomato soup. My personal favorite.
Nice. Very nice. Damn, that sounds kind of good right now.
I know, I'm so
fucking hungry now that you mention it. But I do, yeah. This so they go over to, let's talk about Graves and Balloons and Maggie giving up the watch.
Giving up the watch. Yeah. Well, like, you know, it was a little callback to the last episode that, you know, Enid was getting, you know, fucking harassed by creepiest piece of dog shit in the world in the last episode.
Gross.
About those balloons. And she was like, she was not relenting. She wasn't like, fine, take them. She was like, no, I want to, like, I'm not giving this up. And it was because it was those signal balloons her and, you know, Glenn had and made together. And she put them on his grave. And I was like, aw.
Yeah. I like
that's
that. Cute. I didn't mind that so much. And then we move back to Maggie giving the watch up. And then we don't need anything to remember them by. We have us. I learned that from Jesus like just 3 hours ago.
I prayed to him and I thought, Jesus, how do I remember people? And he came into the room and put his laundry down and said, we got us.
And you know what else I prayed for? I said, Jesus, not only are you going to help me with some country wisdom and making good, yummy food, but I also want you to please keep me real skinny and my ass fitting into these very hip and designer skinny jeans that tuck nicely into my designer boots. Which I have.
Dear Jesus, may we please find a broken down truck of True Religion jeans out here in the apocalypse somewhere. Nothing fits the cut of my ass better.
Jesus, I still like lowriders, but the skinny jeans I can get into too. Mm-hmm. And these boots, they're to die for. I mean,
and he's like, you don't have to close your eyes and talk to the sky like I'm here. I'm right here.
I'm over here. What do you want?
I'm in the same room.
You want me to steal something? I can steal something.
I can do that. It's fine.
I can steal shit. Or I can shitty kick something. I will shitty kick.
Shitty kick this coat right off the rack of here.
I shitty kick the coat off a rack. That's what I do. I'm Jesus. Yeah. So they pray. And Negan loads up some trucks. Negan's crew, sorry. Sasha sharpens her blade.
With a cigar in her mouth, the last thing that was in Abraham's possession.
I'm good with this. I'm feeling good about good. Sasha.
Yeah, I'm into it. I am pretty high on Sasha and Maggie. I'm hopeful for them.
Me too. And then Jesus jumps in the back of the truck. Trucks take a swig of the scotch. She's crawl on the truck. Oh, hey, whoa, what? Cool.
My Hawthorne Heights city is skipping, Jesus.
Hey, Carl, have you seen any rollerblades? The end.
Mine.
I like how he dumps the scotch out. I thought that was a cool fuck you.
Yeah, like you don't get this shit.
I like that. I like
because we know the saviors do that shit. They burn mattresses and all this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Fucking assholes.
Yep, they certainly do that. That fucking pissed you know who off.
Whew.
So that's the end of the episode, pal.
Yeah, that's it.
You want to do some listener comments?
Yes, indeed, and I need to cue mine up.
You need to cue yours up?
I do!
All right, let's cue them up. And let's do this shit, boyo.
Yar.
Yar. Can
I tackle that email?
Yeah, you want to tackle the email?
Or do you? No, I was going to say, do you want to?
So Tim says the following. Okay, hear me out. Is it possible that the graves they showed Negan are filled with a few guns, ? Not all of them, of course, and not the ones they took from Negan, but if someone heard the story of what happened to Glenn and Abraham and figured that Negan would want to disarm the group, is there a better place to hide them, ? Work with Olivia to cook the books. Okay, maybe just adding what was left instead of subtracting what you hid would have avoided Spencer getting caught, but hey, time was tight. And don't even tell Rick because he looked like he'd just seen two girls, one cup on a loop. You see what I'm doing? Could a certain someone have gone from Father McSweaty to hero of the revolution? Also, so agree with you guys about the way they're using Negan the Saviors. I personally think that if Rick and the group have come back with their stories of horror and then Negan has come along, killing walkers very publicly and then were nice and polite and unsleazy, you'd have the people of Alexandria doubting Rick and wondering what they'd done to force Negan and the Saviors to defend themselves. I mean, in The Walking Dead, it's only been a month or two since Rick killed their doctor and a horde attacked them and the wolves attacked them. So I'm thinking that I'd be thinking Rick and his group have already have trouble. Negan could win them over by acting normal and showing the service he provides. Instead, he comes and acting like he has, showing everyone he's not to be trusted. What do you think about that, Matt?
Ooh, interesting.
Awesome. I love it. And yes, I think Negan could have a different approach to build more loyalty, but instead he wants to rely on fear. I also like the idea of a brewing revolution that is secretly being funded by a fucking the Underground Railroad. I think that's fucking awesome. I like that idea a lot, actually. I think that that'd be kind of cool. Like if Father McSweaty was involved with it somehow, and they had graves hidden in there. I think that'd be kind of neat, man. I'm down with something like that.
Yeah, I actually do like that. Any of that deep down fucking revolutionary conspiracy shit, I'm there.
Me too. I love that shit. It's
good stuff.
Who do you got?
All right, I feel like I've been reading him a lot lately, but I really like what he says. Mr. Floyd Fry, he said, "We get it. Maggie can be a leader. We knew it before, and we know it now. We didn't need a convoluted scene of her barking orders and showing her farmer's daughter skills with a tractor to know that.
Mm-hmm.
It was too on the nose, and it was insulting to the audience. Also, Jesus fighting the walkers with his keeks and spleets was laughable." Now, in saying that, the last 5 minutes of the show was great. The conversation with Sasha and Jesus about finding Negan's place was good, and Maggie, Enid, and Sasha's table discussion was good. Enid putting the balloons on the wrong grave, for example, is a touch of realism and good writing that the show needs more of. I feel like I'm higher on the episode than Floyd, but I totally agree with his point about that those last couple of minutes, those personal interactions. We need some more of that. And that was a good moment.
I concur. Awesome. I do want to give one small comment because it's funny and it comes from Damaris, who says, "The fucking hat is back." God, that is...
Yep.
Fucking
there.
That's a simple beauty in that statement, right?
Sums up so many.
All right. Do you have anything else you'd like to get to?
Man. As far as people's comments, no. I think I'm tapped on that.
All right. Final thoughts and observations.
Whew. Final thoughts. Well, like I said at the top, I think this is a better episode than last week. In a broader range, I didn't need to see more of Negan being a shitty bad guy bully. It's one note. We get it. We don't need a lot of it. I feel like the less they use of Negan, the better. We need to make him to keep him scary and interesting and fascinating. We need to see him less. Like, it's good to step away from that. So I do feel like this episode is still a step up from last week. That being said, it didn't need to be so long. We really didn't need that. There was nothing here that demanded that level of attention. And I really wish, it's funny, I wish they would have either made it a very tightly focused Maggie and Sasha with a slight side note of Jesus and Gregory episode versus trying to include Carl. Although I liked Enid coming in at the end, I almost would have liked just seeing Enid pop in at the end without any lead up to her leaving Alexandria or anything else. I wanted this to either be a more focused Maggie and Sasha episode or a split between them at Hilltop and then getting a look at something else wider in the world. Like I was saying earlier, like, let's get a look in at the kingdom at the same time. Like, I feel like this show feels like it has to narrow its focus in a way that it doesn't actually have to do. Like, it's like they think they can't do two storylines at once in different places. Like, we got 2 minutes of Alexandria before this, and the rest of it was Hilltop, and Carl and Enid headed toward Hilltop, and I feel like that's a big hurdle for them, where I'm like, you can do both. Like, we can look into Alexandria and Hilltop, or Alexandria and the Kingdom, or the fucking Kingdom and the Hilltop, or the fucking Kingdom and, the Savior's compound. Like, we can diversify our focus a little bit more. I feel like this episode suffered a little bit from that, but my hopes still lie in Maggie and Sasha, and I want to see more of that conspiratorial attitude from Sasha. I would actually almost like to see the character of Jesus eventually become more closely allied and like subservient to somebody like Sasha. Like, he shies away from loyalty with Gregory and sides up. Like, he almost needs a superior, somebody giving him a good order, like a mission. Like, that's something he needs. And I would love to see Sasha grow into that kind of role. And like we've already said, I would love to see Maggie kind of grow into the role of leader. You know, I love the idea of eventually Rick back on top of an ascendant Alexandria after they've maybe either overcome Negan and the Saviors or beaten them back at least somewhat, and Rick being able to deal with Maggie as the leader of an allied colony. I think that's some cool larger world shit. So I still love the overall direction things are going. Some of the details in the middle here are just a little mucky, but I still have my faith in this show. I think, you know, I the first episode of the season I was talking like, man, this show is actually a little bit on thin ice for me. I'm not sure if I love the direction this is going, just the carelessness of the story, and maybe I'm not here for the end. At this point, I think I'm a Walking Dead fucking viewer to the end. I'm going to see how this concludes, and I have confidence that we're going to get to an interesting place.
I like it. I feel that one of the things that The Walking Dead tends to do is it tends to meander a little bit. It likes to meander. There's a couple of moments here of dialogue and just in pacing of the scene, or maybe just in editing, where you have an interaction between Sasha, you have an interaction between Sasha, Maggie, and Jesus, and they're all talking, and then they stop, and there's just this heaviness that hangs, and then it moves on. There's a lot of just weird hitches that I feel happen a lot in this show, where I feel like they're deliberately delaying things and relying on big reveals to actually show things that happen. Now, that being said, I think that I was less down on this episode than most of the other ones outside of course, the stuff with Ezekiel. I like that stuff.
Oh,
I wasn't as down on this episode as some people were that I saw. I liked it. Like I liked some of the stuff that was going on. That being said, I feel like they do meander a little bit too much because they really are trying to drag out the fucking shit. Do you know what I'm saying? Like sometimes if you go back and you break down a season, you can say, what happened this season? You can go, they met this person, then this happened, and then that character died. And you're like, damn, that's it? Like if you bullet out major things that happen in a season, sometimes it's not a lot because it takes so much time to get to some of this stuff, which I think can be a problem. I am high on Maggie right now, and I think that she has a ton of potential. I really like the way that this episode treated her, and I know I pick on her, but I do really like where she's headed. I'm glad Glenn's gone. Bye. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. Check you later, son.
You monster.
Because I think
my poor sweet Glenn, my poor sweet pineapple and ham delivering baby.
Because I think. Can I get a Hawaiian pie? Because I think it's cool. I think it's cool that we're gonna see growth from Maggie as a result of this.
So we freed up
two characters by killing two other characters. We saw the trajectory with Abraham, who was like, I want to have babies, and I'm going to dump this random hot girl and chase this other girl around. And, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, he's on the way out. And we kind of had a feeling Glenn was on the way out. And now we have these two other characters that they could do something with. They could do something interesting with. And I'm looking forward to that. I think Maggie has something interesting going on. I think they're really grooming her to be the leader. I'm not exactly sure what they're doing for Sasha. Maybe Sasha becomes the right-hand man or person and in fills in that like skull-cracking role. I think that would be kind of neat to see how that goes and them running this shit and getting rid of Gregory, and then they can send little Jesus on little stealth missions. Because if he fucking starts doing karate kicks, I'm going to get pissed.
Splinter Cell Jesus.
Yeah, Splinter Cell Jesus. And so that's what's going on. I thought it was a standout moment for Simon. He's good. I want some more subtlety and a little bit more nuance out of Gregory. Listen, part of my problem with Carl is Carl, the character. This sounds so fucking petty, but I really think Mando Torrey's onto something. If he would cut his fucking hair and throw that hat away, I might be on board. There's just something so douchey about it.
It's funny that how rarely, How often aesthetic. Do you have this problem with any television television show where the aesthetic of a character is so much of a stumbling block, where you're like, I really maybe could be on board if they just didn't look like this, if they didn't just this fucking motif we have to have of, oh, well, and this again, I know some people are like, oh, you fucking rag on the comics too hard, but I'm like, I still feel like it's a little bit of comic book fan service. We're like, well, the comic book Carl has the hat on, so we have to put the fucking hat on. I'm like, yeah, the comic book Carl is still like 11 though, and it's kind of like you can buy it because it's a little kid. This kid's fucking 16 years old. Like, it looks goofy.
Sure.
Come on.
Sure. Come yeah. On. Yeah, man. I don't know. It's silly. Like, it's, and look, I get where it comes from in the story, but it's like anything. Like if fucking Rick was just wearing a top hat, I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? Ah. Like, if they met a character who's just like, I'm going to wear a top hat, that's my thing, you'd be like, this is so goofy. And I just feel like, get rid of the hat, fucking cut your hair, dumb. And it would just be easier to swallow. I kind of liked Enid in this episode. I'm excited about Enid and Maggie. Most of Maggie's interactions were favorable. Her punching Gregory, her talking to Sasha, her stepping up as a leader, which was a little corny. I've made fun of that, but her interactions with Enid, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I'm feeling. Like, I think that stuff could have interest there. And that's what I got for you guys. Are we out of here?
Yeah. Man, I'm fucking tapped on this.
Yeah, that was fun. We had a lot of fun talking to you guys. Thanks very much for tuning in. Of course, we'll see you next week. Matthew, tell these good people goodbye.
Have a good night, everybody. See you then.
All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning into another episode of The Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there. Get our name out there. Help us out. And you know what? Check out libertystreetgeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there. Plenty to listen to. Science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right. We'll see you next time.